Hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to the latest episode of the We Can't Wrestle podcast. Of course, the brothers Max and here with you. I'm Nate, along with Aaron.
What's up, everybody?
And we are continuing our journey through the 1994 PWI 500. We're getting into the cream of the crop now. Last week, we ended with Bunkhouse Buck at number 125. Only 1 year pro for yeah. Bunkhouse Buck.
Yes. Hopefully he did better in his sophomore year.
Yeah, hopefully. I think in sophomore year, he won the tag team titles with Dick Slater.
Yeah.
Good for him.
They partnered up with the Grizzled Veteran to teach him the ropes.
And at that time, I think he was also raising his young son who went on to become Jack Swagger.
Yes.
All right. Anyways, so that being said, I want to thank you all for listening to the show, listening to our journey through this PWI 500. We already have a couple plans for other shows to do after this series is over. And once we're done with that, we'll get into that. We'll let you know what we're going to be doing as the show rolls on. And plus, we are in April. So, Aaron, you'll be happy to know we are just about a little over a month away from the Hall of Shame.
Hells yeah. Biggest time of the year.
It's the most wonderful time. Yes, yeah. The Hall of Shame coming up every year in June. We indict the class of the Hall of Shame.
Yes. I wonder who this year I'm going to have say can suck my fucking dick. It's like I need the Paul Heyman of this year's class. I don't know who it's gonna be.
Is Jeff Farmer already in?
Huh? I can't remember.
I was going to be like, you can suck my fucking dick. My
fucking dick.
Yep.
Yep.
Motley Cruz, you can suck you my can fucking suck dick. My
fucking dick.
Yep. Yep. Oh, shit. Anyway, here we go. 124
best
in the 19th.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Best part of that whole thing is like the promo was great and everything, but the commentator Heather's like, Jeff Farmer, everybody.
Yeah. He knew that was a bomb.
Yeah, and Jeff Farmer. There you go. All right.
Well, number 124. Back to 1994, number 124 in the PWI 500 is Gary Albright, 6'4, 350, 6 years pro, excellent amateur career, dominates the UWFI with Nobuhiko Takada and Big Van Vader. Only wrestler to beat Takada in 2.5 years. Has a devastating dragon suplex and many other holds. Gary Albright.
From what I saw of him, hard-hitting, strong-style guy, and never really did much over here that I know of, but over there, he was a big deal.
Yeah, was he ever in WWE developmental?
No, you're thinking of his kid.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, he was, Gary Albright died in, oh man, I forget what year he died.
Yeah, I can look it up here real quick. He passed away in the year 2000, age 36, yeah. Of a heart attack. Jesus.
Yeah, his kid was that, actually liked his kid, Gunner Scott. I think that was his name.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Brent Albright.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those guys that got signed. He got signed in that time, like Johnny Laurinaitis was like hiring just people. And I'm pretty sure, obviously, Johnny Ace was friends with Gary Albright. So it was like, I'll hire his kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it just never. It never amounted to much. He was like in that same class as like Palmer Cannon and just as
guys. There are a lot of guys from that era that just came and went.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. Like the amount of people that like, you know, that era created some huge stars like Cena and Batista and stuff, but a lot of the super undercard guys just came and went. Flash in the pan. You never hear about them ever.
Nope.
Number 123, Bob Orton, 6'1", 245, 21 years pro, one-time bodyguard for Roddy Piper, has had a distinct career in his own right, originator and master of the top rope superplex. Ace still competes on the independent cards.
Yeah, and for a minute I thought you were going to say it was his dad because you didn't say Junior. I'm like, Bob Orton? Good
Lord. Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Bob Orton was one of those guys in this period, if we're talking about like the early 90s or early to mid 90s. He was one of those guys that wasn't, like, I think he did a little deal in WCW in like 92. But for most of the 90s, Bob Orton was one of those guys that would always show up in whenever somebody was trying to do a promotion to compete against WWF and WCW.
Yeah, well, he was
part of that cast, like him and Valentine and Tito and
Morocco.
Like
they were still, they had been out of the sport or had been out of the big leagues or whatever, but not long enough to not be a name value, and they still looked somewhat like what they looked like when they were popular. So yeah, I mean, it's just that, I mean, you gotta make money, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And if these money marks are gonna give it to you, take it.
Absolutely. Hey, they call it the wrestling business for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's like Nash always says, he's a dumb at 1099. I'm not in the WWF business. I'm not in the WCW business. I'm in the Kevin Nash business.
Yep. Except now that his buddies are in there, he's like, I'm in the WWF
business. I'm in the WWF business. Number 122 is Kendo the Samurai. 6 foot 222, years wrestling not available. Mysterious master of martial arts making a mark in Smoky Mountain. Rule breaker from Asia, has had trouble beating top SMW stars.
I remember the character. I just can't remember who played him.
I don't remember who played him either. So we'll move on. Number 121, a guy we just discussed as part of that traveling band of former big stars, Greg Valentine at 121.
Oh, shit. I should have known it. It was that piece of shit, Tim Horner.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, piece it was Tim shit. Horner.
Greg Valentine, 121. The Hammer rolls along the independent circuit, infrequently appearing in the WWF. Has excellent figure four leg lock and elbow smash. Has the Intercontinental and U.S. titles to his credit. He's a couple of things as Greg Valentine. First, much like the Honky Tonk Man, he saw those early days of independent wrestling and conventions and stuff and just has ridden that. And God bless him. Greg Valentine's at every... I don't know, Greg Valentine, it's like that guy must have frequent flyer miles like crazy because it's like he's at every convention. Like, how do you make every convention?
And he also like kind of like the Honky Tonk Man, but I mean he was a better like in-ring performer than the Honky. Shouldn't say in-ring performer. He was a better wrestler than the Honky Tonk Man because Honky Tonk Man was a great in-ring performer. But he also worked a style for like the longest time that even as he got older, it didn't look like he slowed down any because he worked that style when he was younger. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like the grab hold, chops, hammer, like, yeah. And
there's a reason I'm beyond the mat. Jake Roberts, I guess Greg Valentine, we call him Turtle.
Yeah.
I don't think it was because of his shape. Pace.
No, it's because he moved at his own pace. Flair even says it. I think Flair called him Tortoise, but either way, like it's some sort of turtle form or whatever. But yeah, it's like he just moves at his own pace and talks slow. Yeah.
And I would say the only thing that there weren't a lot of flaws in Valentine's game. Actually, the funny thing about it is it's crazy because for like the WWWF, for Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, for any other territory during the territory era, his promo was fine. He was a great territory promo, but when it came to the big time WWF glitz and glamour, he did need Jimmy Hart to be that promo for him, you know, because he, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm not, does what I'm saying make sense? Like, he wasn't a bad promo, but he was like a territory promo.
Yeah. Makes sense. And he wasn't like a cartoonish type character. So, I mean, his speech pattern didn't lend itself to the WWF style or whatever.
Yeah. Number 120 is Jimmy Snuka, 6'2", 50, 25 years pro. Time hasn't slowed the Superfly. Retains a devastating flying body press off the top turnbuckle. Regularly competes in independents. Won the ECW title late last year. Fans sometimes ignore his non-aerial skills. Yeah, at this time, Snuka's just doing the indies, and he did ECW, and I think he, sometime in 94, late 93, he comes back to the WWF for a cup of coffee because he's in the Intercontinental Title Battle Royal and blah, blah, blah. But this time, he's pretty much just working the indies, having Metal Maniac carry his bags around.
Yeah, and, I mean, scumbag human being, but you can't deny that he was a talent and was over like Rover wherever he went. So,
yeah. 119 is Jun Akiyama, 5'11, 225, 2 years pro, already among All Japan's best and getting better. Was an alternate freestyle wrestler on the 1992 Olympic team. Adjusted the pro game quite nicely, or quite quickly, I'm sorry. Trained by Kenta Kobashi. Well conditioned. And he goes on to have a pretty successful career in Japan. But again, we don't talk a lot about the Japanese guys because I don't really watch Japanese wrestling that closely. So I would never, ever presume to be any sort of an expert on the Japanese wrestling scene.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him.
Number 118 is Akira Tao, 6'5", 265, 6 years pro, former sumo wrestler. Now excelling in All Japan, comprises a superb tag team with Toshiaka Kawada, magnificent choke slam, good foot to face movement. Is this the guy
that kicking people in their fucking head?
Is this the guy that wrestled? Is this the same guy that wrestled as Katao at WrestleMania 7?
No.
Okay.
No, that guy didn't make it to 94.
No.
He tried to tussle with Tenta, and that was the end of it for him.
Oh, that was that guy?
Katao was the guy that tried to tussle with Tenta, and Tenta kind of not today, bitch, and then got on the mic.
I mean, I've seen that video and stuff. I guess I didn't know that was Katao.
Yeah, and then he got on the mic and said wrestling was a work or whatever. Yeah, that was that guy. That's why he's at WrestleMania 7, because they were... They brought him and Tenryu over as like the exchange thing. Like, it was like, okay, we'll work with you, but we want two of our guys on WrestleMania so we can have we can show WrestleMania on Japanese TV. You know what I mean?
And then they proceed to have like one of the most racist interviews ever with Regis Philbin.
Yeah. And Bobby Heenan, when they say Tenryu and Katao, Bobby goes, his name is Hand Towel? That's that guy. Yeah, like he thought he was going to fuck around with Tenta, big fat. Like, he's probably just like a big fat fucker. I can take him and Tenta. It wasn't even like a fight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was Tenta like smacking him away and being like, fuck around, find out. And then dude got out of the ring and was like, wrestling's fake. It's like, why are you running then? You ran away. Yeah. That was that guy.
Number 117
He didn't make it to 94.
Number 117 is Connect. 5'11", 235, 22 years pro, 12-time and current UWA heavyweight champion, one of the most recognizable faces in Mexican wrestling, feuded for years with Mil Mascaris, but neither man ever scored a victory. Mexican wrestling I can comment on, a lot more than I can on Japanese wrestling. And I can tell you that when not by like 97, when he was helping out with the AAA thing with the WWF, not so much. He's old, you know, but Canek was pretty good in his prime. I've watched some stuff of him, and he was pretty good. Excuse me.
Was there only one of them?
That I don't know.
Well, I was just hoping there was like more than one, like the Vianos. Like there was at least four of them.
Connect four.
So there was a Connect four. I know there was only one, but this would still be funny. There's Connect.
Well, actually, you made me think. You made me think for a minute because I was like, did he pass his mask on to anybody? You know, because sometimes they do.
Yeah, I know, but I just want there to be a Connect Four and them not even get it because they don't have the game there. Because they just have Ball and Cup.
Number 116, I wonder what this guy's future is going to hold. Johnny Ace, 6'3", 250, 8 years pro. Oh. Kicker and puncher with some aerial skills. One time a flag bearer for the Sheep Herders, regularly competes in Japan. He and Shane Douglas formed the Dynamite Dudes in 1989. Figure it out.
It shouldn't be as no surprise what came of that guy. And I know we're not talking about that current stuff now very much or whatever. And you know what the funny thing about Johnny Ace is? In the ring, he actually wasn't that bad.
No, he really wasn't. Like, he really was. I mean, you know,
people shit on him or whatever, but he's like, he was good. Like, I think if they would have like made him and Shane something other than that, they might have had some legs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've watched his stuff from Japan and everything. It's like Johnny Ace wasn't a shitty wrestler.
There was a reason he was over in Japan. I mean,
yeah. Like, he could go. I think the Dynamic Dudes thing hurt him here, and he got over there and said, fuck it, I'm making my money.
And then he, after the WCW got bought out by the WWF, he attached himself as tightly as he could to Vince McMahon's ass because he knew that that was going to keep him employed for a long time.
And Stephanie liked him because he wasn't Jim Ross or Paul Heyman, and yeah, so as a locker room guy, he's a everything I've read, he's a stoogey asshole scumbag, but wrestling wise, in the ring, on the camera, he wasn't bad. Not saying he was Ric Flair or anything, but
let's see here. Number 115. This guy apparently wrestled. Okay, this number 115 that I'm about to say apparently wrestled for WCW because I actually have a WCW trading card of this guy. And I looked at it one day and I was like, I don't even remember this human being existing. But he apparently wrestled for WCW. His name's Frank Anderson, 6'2", 245, three-time former Greco-Roman world champion and 1984 Olympic bronze medalist for native Sweden, appears to have adapted superbly to the pro style. Powerful with crisp execution of moves, untested. I don't remember this dude working for WCW, but shit you not, I literally have a WCW trading card of him, and all it says on the back is the same thing this says. Wrestled for Sweden in 1984 Olympic Games, or this rookie or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So he was there. He was there long enough for them to give him a trading card, but I don't even remember seeing him on TV.
Yeah, he was just I think he was one of those guys that they hired and they thought they were going to do something with and went through the power plant and because they WCW had that weird time where they were like trying to like go to Germany,
mm-hmm.
and some of them European like those type of European countries, like they were like doing Like they did like a couple pay-per-views over there that were like German only paper. They were starting to kind of almost treat Germany like WWF was treating the United Kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, hell, Germany's where Cactus lost his ear.
Yeah. But like, and they even like they tried for that market for like ever, like even up until like 97, 98. There's like an entire pay-per-view and I watched it once. It was just all in German and it was just a German pay-per-view of WCW. Like it had German commentators and German announcer. And so I think he's probably in that.
You know, it was the
type
worst
situation.
You know, it was the worst thing they ever tried to do. And it was the early days of the internet.
Those audio only pay-per-views.
Yes. The audio only. What the fuck? Like,
people
I don't know.
Probably bought them.
I just, to me, you can translate like baseball to radio, you know?
Yeah.
But wrestling just to me doesn't sound like it translates to radio at all.
Nope.
Although I would like to, now I'm intrigued to go on YouTube and see if anybody has any of those that I could check out because I don't think I've ever seen one. Number 100. Number 114.
All right.
Yes, Ray Charles' favorite pay-per-view. Number 114 is Butch Reed, 6'2", 265, 16 years pro, feuded with Rod Price in Global. Once Ron Simmons' partner, they won the WCW World Tag Belts as Doom, had also competed on the pro rodeo circuit.
All right. I like Butch Reed.
I like Butch Reed too.
I like Ron Simmons more, but that's just because that's Ron fucking Simmons. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think Butch was awesome. And I just think he got in his own way too much in his career, but that is what it is.
He did. And he, I guess that's kind of what I was going to say while I was reading the bio of him, you know, like, all these other guys during, like these guys that were stars in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of them are still going to be a part of one of the big promotions during the Monday Night War, you know, and getting to cash in on some of that popularity. And Butch is not, you know, he's not a part of the Monday Night Wars. He just, I don't know, like you said, he sounds like he got in his own way a lot.
And you could only walk out on company so many times or not show up so many times before they're just like, no. You know what I mean? Like, we're not bringing that guy in.
Right.
I think he was older than what, I don't know how old he was when he died, but I always think he was older than what people thought he was too.
Like Virgil?
Yeah, or like a guy that you didn't realize how long he had actually been in the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because he started in like 77 or 78, I think.
Kind of like a Bad News Brown or an Axe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh man, by the time that guy got there, he had already been doing it since like the fucking 70s, you know?
Yeah. Or an Axe's case, what did we say last week? Like 1968?
Some like, shit like Jesus. That. Yeah, that dude was old as fuck.
All right, 113, Vic Steamboat, 6'1", 235, 8 years pro, scientific wrestler in the style of older brother Rick, champion of the New England-based Century Wrestling Alliance, excellent flying press.
I don't know why when you were like, older brother Rick, no. I just love how they blatantly lie about shit. Like, it's so fun. Go ahead.
No, that was it. That was his whole bio.
Oh.
But yeah, it is funny. I was just like, yeah, that's not Ricky Steamboat's brother.
That's Ricky Steamboat's brother, and Bunkhouse Buck has only wrestled for a year. What is going on? But now, I mean, I don't know anything about Vic Steamboat other than, you know, the match.
Yes, the legendary Tony Atlas match.
Other than that, I don't know anything about the guy. I don't know what his real name was. I don't know what he did before, what he did after. I have no fucking idea.
All right. Number 112, Al Snow, 6'1", 237, 12 years pro, has revived the fabulous Kangaroos with Denny Cass, but the Melbourne native's claim to fame is a victory over Sabu. High Flyer has competed in many federations, including WCW and the WWF. I was going to say a very young Al Snow, but he's not very young. He's been wrestling 12 years at this point.
Yeah, it took Al a minute to get to where he got. And I've got no problem with Al Snow. I mean, I think he's all, I thought he's awesome. I still think he's awesome. And like, he doesn't work anymore and he's in the best shape of his fucking life. I got no problem with Al Snow.
I absolutely agree. I think that he, what do I want to say? He is a guy that absolutely positively served his purpose and did. He was never going to get to that next level just because he just wasn't. But for the level he was at, he was one of the best at it. If any of that makes sense. It sounded like I was rambling to me, but I think what I said makes sense.
He's never going to be your world champion, but he's going to be top of your mid-card, and he can do whatever you need him to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's not bell to bell as good as this guy, but I'd consider him like in the same level as like a William Regal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a huge William Regal fan, but I've never said, man, William Regal should have been the world heavyweight champion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would have been mad that it happened, but I was never just like, oh man.
It has to
that happen. Guy should have been world. Yeah, that guy should have been world champ. You know, it's not like a Scott Hall where I'm like, Scott Hall, it's bullshit that he was never a world champion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's how I look.
And I know he was in the AWA, but Kurt Hennig, you know. How was Kurt Hennig never the world champion? And I know he was the AWA, but goddamn it, I'm just saying.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, that's how I look at Al.
Number 111 is Negro Casas, 5'7", 180, 15 years pro. Some call this Mexico City native a technical equal of Bret Hart or Ric Flair. Has held numerous middleweight or welterweight titles. No weaknesses in his style. Very personable. Another guy that I can say anything that I've gone back and watched from him was very good. I could actually see the comparison to Bret Hart. Very, very sound technical wrestler.
Uh-huh. Negro Casas. Every time I hear in Mexican wrestling with the Negro thing, I think. Have you ever seen that scene with Fred Sanford and Lamont at the Mexican restaurant?
Beans and disease to you too.
No, it's a different one. They're drinking like the Mexican drink. It's like, and it's like,
if I have seen it, I don't remember it.
Because the Mexican guy's like, hello, Negro. And he's like, what do you call him? You know, it's just, anyway, you got to watch it. It's funny.
Number 110 is Doug Furness, 5'11", 243, 8 years pro, Oklahoman and former champion weightlifter. Has won multiple tag team titles with Dan Crawford, among the strongest wrestlers anywhere, competes in Japan, also in Mexico. This is a guy, this Doug Furness dude, is a guy that I will always say, there are guys that just aren't great singles wrestlers, but translate fantastic into being a tag team wrestler, like Stevie Ray.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Doug Furness fan singles. He's also a guy that should have shaved his head. Like, it's like he's this big monstrous guy and he's got like a perm. So like, why do you have a big perm?
And it's like, what's a big perm?
Yeah, it's like a wet Jerry curl type, almost like it's not Jerry curl, but it's like a wet perm. It's like, what is going on? You're not intimidating with a big perm and your big porn mustache. Ted Arcidi kind of did the same thing. Like, shave your head. But no, Doug, and he was also better after he wasn't so fucking big. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, when they brought him into like WCW, I didn't like him there. Wasn't a big fan of him in Smoky Mountain. And he brought his shitty little brother with him. But when he got with Crawford or LaFay, whatever you want to call him, then he was great. Like, I enjoyed those guys. But Doug Furness by himself, I don't have time. I don't want to shit on the guy because he's dead or whatever, but I just didn't really have time.
And I, like I said, I wasn't even shitting on him. You're not shitting on him. He was better as a tag team. I mean, I really like Jim Neidhart, but Jim Neidhart was best when he was in a tag team with Bret Hart. You know what I mean? Sometimes you're a star. It's just like the movies. Sometimes you're a blockbuster main list star. Sometimes you're better as part of an ensemble.
Yeah.
Number 109 is Scott Putski, 6 foot 235, 8 years pro, muscular global contender and former North American champion. Reminds some of the Ultimate Warrior. Out of Father Ivan's shadow. Former Texas Christian University football star, also a personal trainer. I have to say, back in the day,
it's a turd.
See, but here's what's funny is now I look back on it with my kid eyes, and I agree with you. But back in the day, like early teen me watching him in Global, and then when he came into the WWF for that cup of coffee with Brian Christopher and stuff, teenage me thought Scott Putski was the shit and was going to be a star. I had no fuck all about the business.
Yeah, he was a fucking turd, a wet turd, just a wet turd on the carpet. Nobody wants it. My favorite thing that ever, shouldn't say my favorite thing that ever happened to him, but it's so funny when he, because he wrestles that In Your House or whatever, and the match before, Marlena hit Pillman with the brick, and then the next match, Putski breaks his fucking, busts his knee up, and they're like trying to take care of him, and Lawler's like, try using this, and it's the brick.
Yeah.
That's just, I that guy sucked. Then he went to WCW and was like wearing like the poofy Seinfeld shirt. Like, what is it now? What is this now? It's like,
What is this now? What is with this guy?
Yeah. Why is he wearing that big hat and the poofy shirt? Yeah, this guy, he sucked. I like this dad. I don't like Scott.
Number 108, another guy you don't like, Brutus Beefcake. 6'4", 273, 11 years pro. Cap solo comeback by beating Nails for the WWWA title in Atlantic City in April. Completely recovered from the 1990 parasailing accident, longtime pal of Hulk Hogan appeared on Thunder in Paradise. So when they went to press with this, he had not appeared, I don't think, with Hogan in WCW, because by the end of 1994, he's going to be the biggest bomb of a main event of Starrcade ever. Who decided that the Butcher versus Hulk Hogan should main event Starrcade?
And WCW's first shit the bed situation where they unveiled the masked man as being Brutus Beefcake.
went over like a lead balloon.
It went over like a Brutus Beefcake match. And I shouldn't say that because I know like in the 80s he was over.
Yeah, I mean, you can never argue the fact that he was over, but yeah, by this point and putting him, in the WWF, Brutus the Barber Beefcake was over and it worked, and you can admit that, and I mean, we have to admit that. It just, the proof is there. WCW, he never worked. Never worked.
Nope.
The WCW crowd barely wanted to accept Hulk Hogan. You know, yeah. Like 6 months into Hulk Hogan's run, they were starting already to boo him. Like the fucking luster wore off, and it's like, oh, now you're gonna bring this fucking pool bag, yeah. Try to put him in the main event.
Now you're gonna bring your jerk off friend with you.
I mean, just think about this, folks. WCW went from one Starrcade to another. They went from some of the best storytelling and one of the best matches in the history of that company, Flair versus Vader at Starrcade 93, to Hogan versus Beefcake at Starrcade 94.
Just horrible.
Like Mr. T's wearing like that big hat.
Yeah, it's like a fucking, it's like a giant elf. A giant black elf. It's a belf. It's right. Just all bad. And like they thought, oh, Mr. T.
He hasn't been relevant since 87.
Yeah, nobody cares about Mr. T.
God.
Like they care about him now, or they cared about him for a little bit, like during COVID. Like he was selling, like, I don't know, what the hell was he selling?
He did the retro thing. A lot of people do that. You know, you're big for a time, the 15 minutes of fame people. You're a big, huge, hot thing for like a year and a half, 2 years, and then you fall off a cliff. Excuse me, but then like 20 or 30 years later, all the people that watched you when they were kids, you can capitalize
I'm saying that like he sold like he sold an energy drink and then some honey or something for a little bit during like the COVID times, which is cool, good for him, make you money. But in like 94, it was still too close to like 86, 87. Yep. We're like, yep, we don't want you around. That whole time of WCW is just stupid.
Yep. From the minute that Hogan beats Flair in the retirement cage match at Halloween Havoc until the NWO starts. WCW is rough. Even the beginning of Nitro. It's the same fucking thing over and over and over again with the Luger thing and the fucking, yeah.
Dungeon of Doom's gonna run out, and then Luger and Hogan are gonna get into it, and Sting's gonna be like, you guys need to get along. It's like, what is going on? Well, it's not what is going on. I know exactly what's going on because it's happening every week.
Yeah. I don't need a recap. You're gonna do it again at the end of this show.
Yeah. And then it's just Bischoff and Mongo like jacking each other off while Bobby has to sit in the middle.
Yeah, it's just Mongo going, you don't want to watch them other guys, baby.
Yeah, the big old doofuses over there.
they're playing with kids. Whoa, man.
They fired those guys.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. There's a Nitro that Luger is like, okay, it's one of those Nitros. Like, I don't fucking know. Pick a Nitro for that from that era. But it's Hogan, Luger, Savage, and Sting in the ring.
He's like, I'm tired of playing with kids.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa. All right, Dan Schneider. sick and tired of playing with kids. Yeesh.
Like, good. We're all happy about that. We're all kind of sick of it too.
Yeah, we're kind of sick of you doing it there, buddy. 107 is Tasmaniac, 5'11", 221, 7 years pro. Found a home in ECW where he's wrestled Sabu and Shane Douglas, among others. Superb suplex, rule breaker, but skills are underrated. Former IWCCW light heavyweight champ, briefly in Smoky Mountain. It's gonna be a little bit longer before they have Taz shed the, you know, the furry boots and the wild man gimmick or whatever. But he was always good. I like Taz a lot.
I don't mind Taz. I'm more of a fan of him, like, post in-ring career. But I'm not ever gonna say that he was bad or anything like that. I liked when he was an asshole for a little bit in ECW there, and then I wasn't a big fan of babyface asshole Taz. I was more of a fan of, like, when he was like with Alfonso and shit like that. But then I think his character just got kind of repetitive.
Yeah, and I won't argue that. I won't argue that. And like you said, I am definitely like a huge fan of post wrestling Taz. Like,
I Go ahead.
I was just gonna say Taz and Michael Cole is a heavily underrated commentary team.
Yeah, and I know this guy was active in the everything when we were kids watching and everything. But I'd say, like, I compare Taz a lot to Jesse Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the ring. He was all right. Good talent. Like, you know, Taz is a much better worker than Jesse Ventura was. But he was a great talker. But after you got him out of the ring, I think his second career was much better than his first career, in my
opinion. Oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt. All right, number 106 is, let me get this name right, Nobuhiko Takada, currently the UWFI champion, incredibly fast with powerful kicks, beat Big Van Vader before 46,000 in Tokyo, has lost just once in 2.5 years, but wrestles only monthly. Another guy, I couldn't pick him out of a pack, probably.
I have no idea.
Number 105, Ivan Koloff, 5'11", 249, 33 years pro, often appears on independent cards in Midwest and Virginia. Veteran will always be known for beating WWF champ Bruno Sammartino in 1971, ending a reign that had lasted since 1963. Ivan Koloff is the epitome of gave back.
Yeah. And like, he should be, I know he wasn't as successful as him, but he's the guy that should be spoken the same breath as Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Just unselfish, and I've made my money, I've done my thing, and I need to make sure that you can do the same, you know?
Yeah. And criminally still not in the WWE Hall of Fame. Hopefully Hunter will change that.
I never understood that one.
Like, of all the people. And we even talked last week about those stupid, like, inducting 9 guys at once or something, you know, that they did for a while. They're the Legends thing or whatever it was. And he never even got into one of those. I just don't get it.
I don't think he ever got into any of them lawsuits or anything.
Mm-mm, not that I know of.
That's why some of those guys, like, you don't see them in there, because they got into those class action lawsuits that Constantinople guy or whatever.
That Istanbul, not Constantinople guy.
Yeah, that guy. They should put the judge that finally told him to fuck off out of here. They should put her in the Hall of Fame. Like, she was like, stop it.
Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah, you've tried this too much. But yeah, they should put her in the Hall of Fame.
But yeah, Ivan, just like I said, just to me, the epitome of giving back. You know, he did... And anybody that listens to the show knows that I'm one of those people that I'm just not a big fan of Nikita. I'm just not. But Ivan made Nikita. Ivan Ivan put people over when people needed put over later in his career. He just he was the epitome of giving back. That's all I can say. Just class act.
It was really good in the ring. I'm never going to say that I'm like a 70s wrestling aficionado or even like, you know, a guy that goes back and watches a lot of 1970s stuff. But like that match with him and Pedro, there's a match with him and Pedro Morales. And I'm like, this is fucking awesome. These dudes are like ripping it up, man. And yeah, I like him and can't say enough good things about him.
I agree. And number 104 is Mike Samples, 6'2", 252, 3 years pro, current championship wrestling from America champ. Successful on the independent scene, excellent build, calculating mind, gathering experience. Wrestled in the USWA under manager Burt Prentice, has also refereed on occasion. The USWA stuff is the only Mike Samples I've ever seen, and I don't really recall him being all that great.
He wasn't.
Number 103 is Robert Gibson, 5'11", 225, 17 years pro, has bounced back from reconstructive knee surgery. Rock and Roll Express star has had solid solo career, the bane of Jim Cornette's existence.
Yeah, this was, I think, when he went back. And I don't know if Ricky had already come back by this point to Smoky Mountain to team with him. I think he was still just Rock and Roll Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Or you said Robert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he was still just Rock and Roll Robert and was like by himself because they ended up bringing Ricky in and playing off the fact that they had mended their fences and shit like that from that stupid WCW feud where they broke him up.
Yep. It's one of those teams that nobody ever should. I'm not saying they never should have made them into single stars. You always have to try that. But it's one of those teams that they never should have made them actually break up. Like,
yeah,
you know, Ricky never should have turned heel on Robert. Even if Ricky was a heel, just let Robert do his own thing and
yeah,
move on.
And it was kind of like and they did it later, and it was fine because he had been gone, but it would have been like Jim Neidhart attacking Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody wants to see that. And I know we're not talking about those guys, but this whole thing is supposed to be just to talk about random shit, right? That's what this,
yeah.
Did you realize that those guys never had a televised one-on-one match during that entire time that feud happened?
Yes,
there was never just a Bret Hart versus Jim Neidhart match.
Yep, there was not. You're absolutely right.
I saw fan cam of one like house show match between them, mm-hmm. but there was never a Bret Hart versus Jim Neidhart match.
Nope. Yeah, they did do on the house show run that they did after SummerSlam 94. You're right. On the house show run, they did Bret and Anvil for a minute. But yeah, they never had a televised singles match against one another. I think there might have been like Bret and Davey versus Owen and Neidhart on Action Zone or some shit like that. But yeah, you're right. They never had a singles match on TV against each other.
And you know what I think it was? I think it was, and WCW is dumb because they even tried it, but I was like, I think this is like Flair and Arn. Like, nobody wants to watch these guys wrestle each other.
Right.
Like, nobody wants to see that. They were too believable as being best friends because guess what? They were best friends.
Yeah. Much like we were just talking about Ricky and Robert. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, nobody's going to believe this. Anyway, go ahead. Next
thing. Number 102 is Tommy Dreamer, 6'3", 245, 5 years pro, former IWCCW TV champion, now in ECW. Drew the ire of Jimmy Snuka by saying Superfly was his boyhood idol, leading to several intense matches. Finishing move is sleeper hold called Dreamland. And I think this is still the suspender wearing Tommy Dreamer.
Oh, definitely.
This is definitely suspender Tommy Dreamer, but he's starting to get a little bit of a quote unquote rougher edge because of his dealings with Nick. But yeah.
Yeah, his shit doesn't really pop off until the Sandman thing with the cane.
Yeah. But yeah, just he is what he is.
And he's another one of those guys. He's another one of those guys where you say, man, even if I don't dig him, he was fucking over with that ECW crowd. Once he got over, he was fucking over.
Yeah, he was their little hometown boy, so he is what he is.
Number 101, hindsight 2020. I've said it a couple of times on recent shows because I'm starting to realize it. The best luchador to ever wrestle in the United States now. Maybe the best luchador of all time. Rey Mysterio Jr., 5'3", 140, 3 years pro. Dynamic Mexican light heavyweight who's actually from San Diego. Small, incredibly innovative aerialist, only 20 years old, hugely popular in Southern California, has won Mexican lightweight and welterweight titles, extremely studious.
So say what you're saying, I just had how old he was. I was like, what was he, like 17?
Yeah, he was 20 at this point, but he was wrestling at like 15.
Well, over down there in Mexico, you're like, 13, put him in the ring. Let's see what he does.
What's a labor law?
Yeah. No, I mean,
but I do. I contest that he's the greatest lucha of all time at this point.
And he's just there's not a lot of wrestlers that you can say there's nobody like that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? For as great as Hulk Hogan was, there's like 10 guys that were like Hulk Hogan. You know, and Hulk Hogan was like superstar Billy Graham. You know what I mean? But I can't say it, and I know there's masked guys out there or whatever, but it's like, yeah, you're not Rey Mysterio. There's nobody like this fucking guy. There's none of these guys that are going to have the career that he had either. Like, we went to that house show and we were talking about it. He's what, like, I don't know fucking how old he is now. Is he 50? Well, if he's 20 here.
He's 20 and 94, so yeah, he's 50.
And he's still doing it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is it more in a tag team type realm? Yeah, but he's still fucking doing it. There's nobody that's going to be able to say that. And he's still doing it good. Like, Mil Máscaras went for fucking ever, and I'll give you whatever you guys say is great back in the day, sure. But by this time that Mil Máscaras was at, that Rey Mysterio's at now, he wasn't great.
No. He's prancing around the ring on his tiptoes, sucking his gut in.
Sucking his gut in and looking like a fucking moron. This is Rey Mysterio. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was the shit. Still is.
Number 100 is the original Sheik. 5'11", 247, 42 years pro. A sadist at 70. Ranking almost, I don't even, this sentence doesn't make any sense, so I'm not going to read. I don't like reading a sentence that doesn't make any sense. It makes me mad. I think it should say, because it says a sadist at 70. The sentence says ranking almost matches at his age. I don't even know what that means. It was probably a misprint, but remains among the most violent of wrestlers, regularly wrestles on both sides of the Pacific, occasionally teaming with protege Sabu. The Sheik. You can't deny the Sheik and his legacy. His legacy, we're doing an entire show about the promotion ECW, and you can argue that the Sheik's legacy is ECW.
Yeah, and just that style of wrestling and Sabu and Rob Van Dam, obviously.
I mean, the two guys here that I'm looking at, the picture that they have of the Sheik here is a bloody Sheik versus a bloody Terry Funk. And you know what I mean? When you talk about the origins of hardcore wrestling, there it is right there.
Yeah. Like I say, you can't deny what he did for the business and what he meant to the business, and also respecting of protecting it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That goes a lot with me too. Like, I'm not trying to say like I'm in the wrestling business, which I'm obviously not, but that goes a long way with me is when I hear about a guy protecting it.
Yeah. Well, and that's to go to that, and I don't mind plugging it at all, because I talk about it whenever I can, because it's one of my favorite books ever. But in Brian Solomon's book about the Sheik, just to say somebody protecting the business, there are to this day, Brian Solomon did one of the most in-depth, best researched wrestling books of all time on the Sheik. I mean, that day I put in the fucking work. And there's still stuff in the book where it's like, we don't know if this is true or if it's not true, but you know, like, that's how protective at times that he was, even with his inner circle.
So yeah. So mad props on that.
Number 99 is Earthquake, 6'4", 462, 6 years pro, former sumo wrestler, returned to the WWF, was injured by Yokozuna, one-time tag team champ, tag teammate of Typhoon in the Natural Disasters, renowned for breaking Hulk Hogan's ribs with Splash in Canadian Independence. Love me some Earthquake, man. Although the 94 Earthquake Yokozuna sumo thing was a fucking fart in church.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It was kind of like what we were talking about when they try to do like, oh, we're going to have this shoot match. It's like, this is wrestling. We don't want to watch sumo. If we wanted to watch sumo wrestling, we'd watch sumo wrestling.
Yeah. But overall, I am an Earthquake fan. I like Earthquake.
I do too. And he beat up Katao, so good for him. More protecting the business.
And him and Typhoon as the Natural Disasters were in, like, the WWF. It's funny because, you know, some of the teams and stuff you remember fondly and shit like that. But there's never been a division that's kind of been on its ass for as long as the WWF tag title division was. And again, the Quebecers were good and the Smoking Guns were good and everything. But from late 91... with the emergence of the Earthquake and Typhoon, until you get to the New Age Outlaws, the WWF tag division is such a back burner. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah.
I don't know. Because it went from the amazing tag roster in the 80s.
That division's like that, though, because I was just watching it now, and I'm like, their tag team division's fucking fire right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of great teams. But there for a while, it was like, oh, our tag team champions are David Otunga and Michael McGillicuddy.
I was about to say Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov.
Yeah, that's entertaining. Those guys were entertaining together, but it's like, right. What's going on?
Why are they the champions? Now
it's like, now we got the AOP and the Street Profits and Fury and Waller and just, yeah, it's like now the division's fucking banger, man.
Mm-hmm.
But there for a while it was just pure garbage. But yeah, and I prefer me some heel Natural Disasters, but face the Natural Disasters are fine. Like,
have you seen me? You might not. Sometimes I comment, like, I literally have a picture saved on my phone. It's from the advertisement for the Survivor Series 1992, I think it is. And it's like Typhoon and Earthquake and their big fat faces and they're smiling. And sometimes if somebody posts something that I like, I'll post that picture and just be like, happy Natural Disasters approved this post.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, the older I've gotten, and I didn't think about it until like I read a thing with Brett, because Brett really liked John Tenta, like they were buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, the natural disasters, John Tenta and Fred Ottoman, are like the nicest guys in the world. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just these two big, lovable, nice guys. And they got to go out on the road and like be mean and stuff. And then when they find, like said, when those guys finally found out, especially Tenta, when they finally found out they were turning face, he was like, oh, I can start being nice to the kids. I can get autographs. And he's like, it's going to be awesome. You know what I mean? Like he's like, they were genuinely happy that they were getting ready to turn face.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because, oh, we can start selling merchandise. It's like, oh, man.
We can start interacting with the fans.
Yeah,
and
we can start slapping hands. We can stop being dicks in public. It'd be great.
Number 98, we brought him up a little bit earlier when we talked about Butch Reed, is Ron Simmons, 6'2", 260, 8 years pro. The All-American is struggling, has rarely competed in recent months. Held the WCW World title for 4 months in 1992, but since has faded quickly. As one of the sport's best power slams, former Florida State football star. WCW did Ron Simmons dirty.
Yeah, they got... He was a guy... I think he was a guy, too, that was like... He's one of the ones Hogan wanted to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan wanted to get rid of these guys that A, he was afraid were going to hurt him, and B, looked better than him.
Yes, and we're going to be more over than him. The only one he couldn't do that to was Sting.
Yeah.
It was like Sting, WCW, Sting was kind of untouchable in that respect, you know, like he was like the fucking, I know Flair was like synonymous with it or whatever, but Sting was the franchise babyface. So, and Sting also played ball with Hogan.
That's what I was going to say. Sting was a get along to get it on guy, you know what I mean? Like he didn't, Sting was going to make his money.
Yeah.
Like, Sting didn't care. I'm sure he cared about titles, but Sting didn't give a shit if he was going to be the world champion or not. Just pay me my money.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's a reason that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were even like, look, we know we're not going to make Sting money, but we want to make, like, second to Sting money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, it's just... But, like, the guys like Ron Simmons... Rude, Vader. It's like these guys could fuck me up if they wanted to. And yeah, and they did, and Bill Watts like, oh, we're gonna put the belt on Ron or whatever. It's like, but then you didn't have anybody set up to go after it. Like, who's he gonna fight next?
Well, and it's like,
I love Barbarian, but Barbarian should not have been the first person that Ron Simmons won the belt.
Yes. They should have went from Simmons winning the title from Vader, finish up Vader, and Simmons on to Rick Rude is what should have happened.
And he beats Rick Rude.
Yes.
Yeah, fucking Barbarian.
Halloween Havoc 92. It's Ron Simmons versus the Barbarian. With Cactus Jack. Acting as a manager.
And Tony Atlas. That's our that's our big heel stable. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Tony Atlas would have been better than Barbarian.
I hate to say it, but there are a lot of those old school guys that just because they don't like Vince McMahon. Or they, you know, they don't like this or they don't like that. They will die on a hill that Bill Watts is a fantastic booker. He wasn't a fantastic... He was fine. I'm not saying that some Mid-South shit wasn't cool as fuck and everything, but they act like fucking Bill Watts never fucked up. And he fucked up plenty.
Or like everything, everybody he picked was great or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
Or like, why am I watching? Why am I hearing about the greatest booker of all time and watching an old ass Mr. Wrestling 2 in his tidy whiteies?
Yeah.
Or Bob, I don't know. I don't know. I just the Bill Watts thing to me is like one of those, you know, okay. So we know he was a bastard and a bigot and he was an okay booker, but whatever. It is what it is. People like what they like, and I'm not going to share. I just think that Bill Watts gets put on a pedestal as a booker that is kind of fabricated.
Yeah, and stubble out here with like Bob Roop. It's like, what? What is Bob Roop? That dude sucked.
We're gonna eliminate moves off the top rope. Ooh, that'll make for some exciting fucking television.
Yeah. We're going to take away the top rope, but this light heavyweight division is going to be off the chart. flying Brian off the second rope. That's exciting.
Grounded Brian.
Yeah.
There's a sacred cow. There's a sacred cow I just slaughtered. Bill Watts is a booker.
It's just dumb.
But anyway, back to this 500. 97, Hiroshi Hase.
Yeah, it was like, we don't need guys jumping off the top rope. It's like, well, yeah, because you have Bob Roop and fucking, what was that? Guy dressed up like a military guy or whatever with his lunchbox and his little hammer. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Fuck. I can't remember. I mean, I know Dick Murdoch did that, but you're talking about somebody different.
Yeah, he came out, here come the judge or whatever. that guy's name. But anyway, it's like, yeah, nobody wants to see those guys come off the top rope.
They can't.
Yeah, because they can't. But now you got Brian Pillman, you got Brad Armstrong, you got Bobby Eaton, you got the names just keep on going. Yeah, anyway, go ahead. Who's the next person?
97 is Hiroshi Hase, 5'11", 225, 9 years pro. New Japan star, famed for his suplex. Has extensive North American experience in Calgary, Continental, and WCW. Won the IWGP tag titles with Kensuke Sasaki and the Great Muta. Hase was good.
Yeah, as I guess, I don't have a lot on it.
96 is Rick Morton. They have Rick Morton here. Ricky Morton, 5'11", 228, 16 years pro. An aerial star, despite his age and experience. He and Robert Gibson are the Rock and Roll Express, Smoky Mountain's most popular tag team. Also competed in the WWF, sworn enemies of Jim Cornette.
Okay, so I guess Robert had been back by then, but... Or him and Robert had gotten back together. Yes. But yeah, that was... I mean, what the hell can't you say great about Ricky Morton?
One of the great wrestlers of all time, period. End of story.
Yeah, and just an entertaining motherfucker, man. And who are we talking about that, like, when you look at the guy, he's like, he's not going to be any good. Who was it? Somebody like current.
I can't remember.
It was Pete Dunne's partner.
Oh, Tyler Bate.
A little furry guy. You look at him and you're like, he's not going to be any good. And then he tears it up. You know what I mean? When you see a Robert, or when you see a Ricky Morton, you're like, yeah, I don't know if this guy's going to be any good. He's tiny, or I shouldn't say tiny, but he's like a little guy, kind of frumpy, you know? Got his little spiky mullet. This isn't kind of bad yet. And you're like, holy shit.
Holy fuck.
This guy's fucking amazing.
And there is nobody.
And then you see him now and you're like, there's no way. He's like 72 years old. He's not going to do any good.
You're like, holy shit.
He just did a Canadian destroyer.
And I will say this too. I will die on a hill that Ricky Steamboat, great at it. Shawn Michaels, great at it. some other guys super great at it. Ricky Steamboat and Shawn Michaels come to mind first. There ain't nobody that could take a fucking beating in pro wrestling like Ricky Morton.
Yeah, make you sympathetic to it.
I still, to the day I die, unless somebody comes along in the modern era that changes my mind, I say Ricky Morton's the best salesman of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say he's up there. I mean, I'd say one or two. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody who I'd put above him.
Like I said, Steamboat, Shawn Michaels are great.
Hogan.
And for a guy in a mask, Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
But to me, Ricky's the best at it.
He has one of my favorite lines ever yelled at a wrestling show, too. When those fans weren't into his match, and he's like, them last two matches must have fucking sucked. He yells it, like, loud.
I was just going to say
what we already said was he's fucking amazing. And he's not 72, he's 67. I aged him a little more, but...
That's all right. Number 95 is Ray Gonzalez, 6'2", 34 years pro. Still only in his early 20s, this Caribbean aerialist continues to improve, has won the WWC tag titles with Ricky Santana, has beaten the likes of Eddie Gilbert. I'm going to move on unless you...
I just remember reading his name a lot in the magazines. And
same.
I think they thought he was going to get over here and do something that never happened.
94, El Hijo de Santo. The Son of Santo, known throughout Mexico as the Legend in the Silver Mask, currently holds the AAA tag title with Octagon, High Flyer inside and outside the ring. El Hijo de Santo, fantastic fucking luchador.
Alright.
Number 93. A guy that I actually liked in his early incarnation much more than I liked in his later incarnation. 93 is Marcus Alexander Bagwell, 6'1", 240, 4 years pro, briefly held the WCW World Tag Team title with Too Cold Scorpio. They split. He now has the Patriot as a new partner. Muscular competitor, excels in tag teams, solo skills improving. I am a Marcus Alexander Bagwell fan and not a Buff Bagwell fan.
I was just going to say after Patriot, like after Stars and Stripes is when I was just like, eh, I don't care about this guy.
See, I don't even mind the American Males. I hate their music. But as a team, I actually liked him and Scott Riggs, too.
Yeah, I like Scott Riggs, but that team didn't do it for me. I thought they looked stupid with their little sneaker boots and tight. It's like, whatever. This fucking sucks. This is the wrong time to be doing this. They're the dynamic dudes. They're the dynamic dudes of 1996. Like, you're trying to do something that was a lame gimmick 3 years earlier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I see what you're saying too, but yeah, for me, lack of interest in Marcus starts when he starts up the Buff Bagwell deal. I'm just not a fan after that point.
He started to believe in his own hype.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
Them early days with him and Too Cold were a fucking awesome tag team.
Yeah. And I don't think Mark was ever a bad wrestler.
No.
You know what I mean? I just think he's got it into his own head of what he thought he was and thought he was more than what he was. Like I love Shivani Shivani. I think he's funny, but I don't like him. Is commentating anymore, but just the guy himself is funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was like a Nitro or Thunder or whatever, and him and Scott Steiner were coming out, and Tony was like, here's Scott Steiner with his flunky Buff Bagwell. And then he said Buff Bagwell was on like an airplane and saw Tony Schiavone. He was like, Hey, Schiavone or whatever. It's like, why you call me a flunky on TV?
Schiavone's like, because you're a flunky on TV? Like, I called you what you are. You're a flunky. That's like, that's funny.
Number 92 is another guy that I will say I'm not a fan of as a singles wrestler, but I liked him in tag teams because he was in a couple of tag teams I really enjoyed. Number 92 is Paul Roma, 5'11", 235, 8 years pro. Teams with Paul Orndorff in rule-breaking, pretty wonderful WCW World Tag Champs. Former WWF tag team competitor. Also in last year's revived Four Horsemen, has professional boxing experience. I like Roma and Hercules, and I like Roma and Orndorff.
Yeah, I thought the Young Stallions were a good team back in the 80s. I think he's a guy that I was just kind of saying is kind of like Buff, where it's like, dude, you're good. You're great.
You like the smell of your own shit too much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody knows 99% of what you're saying is horse shit.
Power and glory.
And
they're going to be sour and gory. Sorry, I just...
Yeah. And is one of the greatest lines ever on a WWE DVD. Here's a new member of the Four Horsemen, Paul Roma, the jab guy from the WWF.
Hunter, fucking Hunter, yeah. Man. You know what's funny about, I don't know, that's just, there is no two people on the planet that could bury somebody like Hunter.
I was even gonna, I put Nash in that group.
Yeah, Nash and Hall. Okay, the Click. Nobody can bury a motherfucker like the Click.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like the craziest part though about I get what you're saying, because Sean and Hunter were blatant about it. Like Nash and Hall would be like kind of like, you know,
yeah,
undercover Barry. Like Scott's gonna oversell for you,
right?
You know, and shit like that. But Sean and Hunter was just like kick a guy in the face and be like, "Who was that?"
Yeah, and you know it's also funny too, though. Not only could they bury somebody the best, but they could also, if they liked somebody, they could lift them up. Like,
oh yeah.
The Click.
Imagine if Shawn Michaels didn't like Sid Vicious.
I was just about to say, imagine if the Click did not like Sid. That was exactly what I was going to say.
It would have been over for him. Like, they would have destroyed him. Because at least Vader could, like, I don't know. At least Vader was a badass. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can look muscular and everything, but that doesn't mean you're tough. And I'm not saying Sid wasn't tough, but Arn Anderson held himself with him. You know what I mean? But if Vader wanted to, he could have kicked the shit out of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he knew he could never go back to WCW. So it's like, I just got to take it. Like, if they would have done that to Sid, if they would have done to Sid what they did to Vader, Sid would have just been. You wouldn't even talk about that guy now.
Or just 13 seconds on the microphone.
Yeah. Just destroy him.
Number 91 is Jinchiro Tenryu. 6'1", 235, 18 years pro. One of the few pro wrestlers with extensive sumo experience. Initially trained by Terry Funk. Has held numerous titles in Asia over the years. Among the craftiest of veterans. Tenryu is one of the Japanese legends, like with Misawa and a couple other guys that I've seen actually quite a bit of. He was a fucking badass.
Oh yeah.
The funny thing about him though, and it's gonna sound silly, but like Tenryu, he's like this badass dude, but like his face, like he looks like he's just this nice guy.
Yeah. It's kind of like it's kind of like Ray Rougeau. Like yep, there was a point where they're like, there's like a point where Ray Rougeau, they're like, oh, you don't want to fuck. Like they're like, Jacques's a jellyfish, but you don't want to fuck with Ray. He'll fuck you up. And he's just like, hey, how you doing?
Yokozuna.
Yokozuna. But if you piss this guy up or piss this guy off, he'll tune you up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like he will fuck you up. Don't mess with him. He's got his like dad stash and his
yeah, he's like, don't give him a mustache a crooked. Number 90.
Fuck around and find out.
Yeah, fuck around and find out, Yokozuna.
Hulk Hogan.
Number 90 is one of the guys, one of the best. I dare anybody to fight me on it. And he doesn't get talked about a lot today. I don't want to say he's getting lost to history, but he's kind of getting lost to history, and it's sad. It's Tito Santana. Among the most popular wrestlers around, often appears in Eastern Independence, although he's no longer in ECW. Feuds with Manny Fernandez and IWCCW, two-time WWF Intercontinental Champion. I was talking to somebody that is around one of my coworkers that's around the same age as us, watched in his prime, you know, prime wrestling fandom at the same time we did. And I literally said to this dude, I feel like Tito Santana is getting lost to history because people don't talk about fucking Tito anymore. And that's sad.
I agree, but it's also, he was, I think he doesn't, how often do you see like Tito Santana's name on like any like the convention circuits or anything?
Right,
like
right. That? And I get that. You're right.
And I think it's just because that guy was like, I'm done with the wrestling business. I'm retired. And like he was one of the guys that did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've made my money and I'm going home now.
Yeah.
And he just never came back. I mean, you see him every once in a while pop up on things, but
it's usually around where he lives, you know.
Yeah, but like I said, he's not actively out there trying to keep his name out there, mm-hmm. And that's just how it is. And he wasn't, how do I say it? Once wrestling goes, once you're out of it, like they don't have light side of the ring.
Right.
You know, oh, this guy was really nice and he was kind to everybody and he made a lot of money and like he didn't.
It's
he
all,
didn't
yeah, it's all the dope. Salacious shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tito didn't do any of that shit. You know what I mean? That's why you don't hear about Nikolai very much. Nobody mm-hmm. talks about Nikolai Volkoff and he was around for fuck ever.
And I know
everybody.
I know wrestling's subjective and everybody has their own opinion and everybody has their own favorites. For my money, in my fandom, Tito Santana, bell to bell, is one of the top 25 workers ever.
Yeah, and I agree. And if they made a Tito Santana documentary, I would watch it.
Yeah.
If they made a Nikolai Volkoff documentary, I'd be like, I'm going to watch this. They're going to go back all the way to like when he was like Bippo and all this shit. You know, I'm going to watch this. But there's not going to be very many other
no,
people that are.
There's no market for the nice guys of professional wrestling.
Yeah, it's not a thing. and that's part of the reason why I don't think you hear about guys like Tito very much.
Yeah, and I mean, the only reason there was a dark side of the ring about Owen Hart is because he died. Like,
yeah.
if Owen was still alive... If Owen was
still alive, they wouldn't talk about him.
Yeah.
And I'd be saying the same thing. Be like, they should talk about that guy because he was fucking awesome. But yeah.
All right, we got time for one more here. Number 89. Somebody say something about getting fired up. It's Tommy Rich. 6 foot 248, 17 years pro, feuding with Jerry Lawler and Brian Christopher in the USWA. A comeback of sorts, as the former NWA World Champion did little in WCW 2 years ago, memorably feuded with Buzz Sawyer. Tommy Rich, Aaron and I got to smoke a cigarette with Tommy Rich one time.
Yes, and then he signed my WCW trading card, and then he said, "I'll sign something else for you for $10." I said, "I gotta go talk to Honky Tonk Man first." And he said, "Fuck that Honky Tonk Man. He's charging $40. I'm only charging $10." I said, "Oh, you got a point." Ew. Like, I know he was probably just ribbing. Like, he doesn't really hate the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah.
It was just funny. But I'm not going to say that he was horrible in the ring. I'm not going to say he was great in the ring. I think Tommy Rich was a moderate worker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But personality-wise...
That's what I was about to say. Personality bomb. Not a bomb in a bad way. Not a bomb in a bad way, folks. Good way. Personality bomb. Tommy Rich is an entertaining motherfucker.
Goddamn, he is. And I think...
And he's also... He's also one of those guys that has absolutely no delusions about anything. He's like, this is who the fuck I am. Like, I'm not playing a fucking character. I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass.
Yeah, he's great, and he's a great character, and I can't say anything really bad about him at all.
All right, so that's going to put a wrap on this week's edition of the We Can't Wrestle podcast, number 89. We left off with Tommy Rich. Next week, we will get to number 88, and on from there. I want to remind everybody, if you have not yet, if you are listening to this show and you're not a part of our Facebook group, the WNR Podcast Network on Facebook, join it today. You can also join the WNR Podcast Network on YouTube. I'm actually working on getting with the YouTube page, to be perfectly honest. It's just reliving the extreme episodes. I'm working on getting some select We Can't Wrestle podcast episodes up there too, because I do the Reliving the Extreme ones weekly, just so they're on there. With We Can't Wrestle, I'm going to do select ones because I don't want to do everyone, because there's too fucking many to go back and do it. But anyway, beside the point. And also, a couple of things coming up that we have. Of course, I mentioned the Hall of Shame just a little bit ago as we started the show. And also, we're going to do what I think we're going to call Wurstlemania, where we are all going to book the worst wrestling card we could possibly book, and then we'll vote on who has the worst one. I think that'll be fun.
Are we going to vote on it, or are we going to like do it and then let the fans vote?
No, we'll just, as you know, between us, whoever participates, okay, we'll just say, "Dude, you had the worst fucking card." And then also another thing that I have that I'm working on right now, I'm probably going to do this. This will be a two-person thing. You can't have multiple people do this. So maybe it'll just be you and me and we'll work it out, because I'm still working out the rules and stuff. And I have to actually pick a year. I want to play draft.
Okay.
Like, I want to pick a year, like say 1995. Because here's kind of what I'm thinking, and I'm not going to ramble because we, you know, but here's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, say Aaron says, let's do 95. Okay, we're going to do 95, and I'm going to take from WWF and WCW in 1995, and I'm going to take 60 wrestlers. Or, and again, I'm still working on the details, but say 60 wrestlers, or 60 singles wrestlers and 10 tag teams or something. And then we're both going to pick 25. And we'll do it like a draft. Like, if you think you're going to draft Bret Hart first and I draft him first, well, fuck, I just lost Bret Hart. But, and then after the draft, then you book your first card with your roster that you built. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. Battle that.
But anyway, just some, you know, throwing out some spitballs for episodes here for the show coming up. But we're still in this 1994 PWI 500. Again, we will start off next week with number 88. Little spoiler or hint. Worst fucking King of the Ring ever. That being said, Aaron, any parting words for our listeners this week?
Nope. Just thanks for listening, I appreciate it. And tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Tell your mama. Tell your mistress about the We Can't Wrestle podcast, and we'll see you next week, everybody. Number 88 is Mabel, by the way.